The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hello, Stephanomics here, the podcast that brings you the global economy. And this week, we're shifting gear to talk about music, fast fashion, and ketchup. We all feel a bit better about our mass consumption culture when we drop our empty milk cartons or last year's trousers in the recycling bin, usually on our way to buying more. But holding on to that warm feeling, I've discovered, relies on not thinking very much about where all that discarded stuff goes next. If you're someone who likes to refresh your wardrobe on a regular basis, you definitely shouldn't go to Ghana, where parts of the coastline are clogged with what locals call dead white people's clothes, washed up on the beach, sometimes in 6-foot piles. Bloomberg investigative reporter Natalie Pearson went to Ghana and India to see for herself what happened to all the secondhand clothes we ship abroad. We have that depressing story in a minute, and some hard truths about plastics recycling from a teacher and former official from the Environmental Protection Agency, Judith Enck. But first, we have an insight into another corner of the economy which looks seriously out of whack. Only this time, the problem isn't excess supply, but an explosion in demand. For tickets to see the singer Taylor Swift, here's Bloomberg's Augusta Sareva.
Good morning, America. It's Taylor. I wanted to tell you something that I've been so excited about for a really long time, have been planning for ages, and I finally get to tell you, I'm going back on tour.
Taylor Swift has been my top streaming artist for 6 years now. Despite that, I've never had a chance to see her live. That's why when the 32-year-old singer announced that she was touring the US for the first time in 5 years next year, I signed up for the pre-sale right away. But when I got to the virtual line on the Ticketmaster platform last week, I quickly found out that I wasn't the only one bringing years of pent-up demand to the table. Not even 8 hours in line were enough for me to score a ticket.
The site was supposed to be opened up for 1.5 million verified Taylor Swift fans. We had 14 million people hit the site. We did sell over 2 million tickets that day. We could have filled 900 stadiums.
That was Greg Maffei, the CEO with Ticketmaster's parent company, in an interview with CNBC. Yes, Greg, I know it all too well. Demand was so high in the pre-sale that Ticketmaster canceled the general public sale after a record 2.4 million tickets were sold. The whole frenzy triggered antitrust investigations from politicians and attorneys general alike. Meanwhile, for those like me, all that's left to do is trying to buy tickets for as much as $40,000 on the secondary market.
We have the means of almost unlimited production. We have an almost unlimited capacity to consume. We need to raise our actual consumption so that it matches our capacity to produce. We know that this doesn't happen.
Supply and demand, two of the oldest concepts in economics. But this is Swiftonomics, where supply is manufactured and accusations of price gouging and monopoly abound. In the early 2000s, late economist Alan Krueger came up with the term Rockonomics. the labor economists who advised two US presidents suggested that economic concepts could be more easily explained through the music industry, which most of us are familiar with. Krueger often used Swift as an example of someone who successfully used loyalty strategies to boost concert and music sales.
First of all, I think Taylor Swift is an economic genius. She has made more money from concerts at her age than Madonna did at her age, or Beyonce, or Lady Gaga. So she's on a tremendous trajectory. And she has done this, I think, by making very good economic decisions.
That was Krueger in a 2018 interview with the Princeton Alumni Magazine. Swift has chosen to play only at high-capacity football stadiums. She's added 17 extra concerts since the Eras Tour was first announced. And she's even created a verified fan system to guarantee only the most loyal had access to the presale. None of that, though, was enough to stop years of pent-up demand turned nearly inelastic for the millions of diehard fans. Not even the fact that Swift will be touring the US at a time when many economists are certain the country will be in a recession. Swiftonomics is its own economics microcosm. And for now, all fans, including myself, can do is shake it off.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Well, as Augusta mentioned, the saga of the Swift tickets isn't just offering a window into millennial spending habits. It's also triggered a renewed debate about antitrust policies in the US, and particularly whether Ticketmaster has been allowed to acquire too much power in the industry. Eleanor Tyler is a legal analyst for the Bloomberg Industry Group in Arlington, Virginia, and she wrote an excellent piece on all of that for us. Eleanor, thank you so much for joining us. Very late notice, just before Thanksgiving. I appreciate it. Why has this Taylor Swift ticket debacle triggered antitrust debates? What exactly is the monopoly problem?
So it falls neatly into a couple of debates that the broader antitrust policy world is having in the United States right now. One of them is about whether vertical mergers are something that the antitrust world should be concerned about.
And when you say, just to explain about what a vertical merger is.
Oh, of course. So there are really, we think of mergers in two ways. Either two companies that directly compete with each other in the same market merge, and then obviously one of them stops competing with the other and the market consolidates. But you can also have mergers between companies that are not in the same market. They are either supplier and buyer, or they are a company that makes a product and maybe one that retails it or distributes it. Those mergers we generally call vertical because they're in different places in the supply chain. It used to be that antitrust didn't consider those to be much of a threat because they weren't consolidating a single market. But economic theory has recently called that into question. A bunch of additional research has happened, and we now are no longer quite so sure that vertical mergers are as efficient and unproblematic as we had believed in the past. This original merger in 2010 between Live Nation, which is a behemoth in concert promotion for major venues, and Ticketmaster, which is a behemoth in primary ticket sales, was very controversial. And the Department of Justice permitted the merger to close with a settlement that both required some structural changes to what would get merged together and also some behavioral promises. The businesses combined promised not to bully other providers and basically throw around their newly acquired market weight, right? That hasn't worked the way one might have hoped it would. And so that likewise feeds into a current debate that's happening in antitrust policy about whether behavioral agreements, you know, not to be nasty once you're allowed to merge, are really a good idea, and whether the best solution isn't to prohibit the merger in the first instance and keep the market power from consolidating rather than trying to tinker on the edges with the merged party and keep the worst outcomes from happening. So those are two big debates that this plays into right now. And now there's a concern that Ticketmaster is becoming a big power in the secondary market as well. In other words, resale of tickets. So there's a concern there that if all of these markets, which play into each other, feed off of each other and work together, might create a situation where the whole industry is more or less dominated by one big firm.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there's an absolute furore on Twitter, and I'm not someone, despite having a Taylor Swift mad 14-year-old daughter at home, I don't spend a lot of time on the relevant Twitter accounts, but I would recommend people listening just take a look at the amount of vitriol against Ticketmaster, and Taylor Swift herself has kind of come out against Ticketmaster. But I didn't know until I read your piece this point about the resale that Ticketmaster, even just in the 3 months to the end of September, did $1.1 billion worth of business, Ticketmaster did, in the ticket resale business. So if you're a fan who spent hours trying to get tickets, you couldn't get one, but somehow these touts or the resale markets could, you are surely looking at Ticketmaster and say, well, you've got no interest in giving the ticket to me if you can get paid twice giving it to somebody else.
That's the real concern. It's a puzzle. Somebody obviously got tickets, right? There aren't exactly tickets left over. And these complaints that we see from private parties in U.S. courts have all claimed that while Ticketmaster says that it is cracking down on scalpers, cracking down on bots that sweep through the system with multiple accounts and grab a bunch of tickets and then place them for resale, that's definitely not where their incentives lie. Buying a ticket on the primary market generates a fee for Live Nation. And then if the ticket is turned around and resold on a Live Nation platform, and they have several through Ticketmaster, then they will generate a second fee. You would imagine that the sale that generates two or even three fees is preferable to the one that's a one and done fee. It explains a lot why the market looks like it does, and why it's so frustrating for ordinary people trying to click with their actual human speed. They're up against bots.
I guess going back to what you said about whether you should be trusting businesses to do the right thing, I guess if you're Ticketmaster and you do the wrong thing and you get on the wrong side of Taylor Swift, I mean, that it's going to rue the day that it didn't make more of an effort.
Well, it certainly has raised the profile of this specific problem. But if Taylor Swift tangles with Live Nation and Ticketmaster, she certainly wouldn't be the first big act to fail in getting them to change their practices. Pearl Jam, back in the aughts, worked hard to try to change the way ticketing happens in the primary market and failed. It's a pretty tall order, but the Swifties may be up to the challenge.
Well, and we've also seen quite a lot of prominent lawmakers weighing in, and I see that the chair of the US Senate's antitrust subcommittee, Amy Klobuchar, she said she'll hold a hearing on Ticketmaster by the end of the year. So I guess you'll be watching that space. Eleanor Tyler, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, now, as promised, we have some bad news for those of you planning to splash out on a new winter wardrobe in the days after Thanksgiving. Here's Natalie Pearson.
Waterlogged clothes roll like carcasses in the waves along the coast of Ghana. The country is one of the world's biggest importers of used clothing. The cast-offs arriving by the bale are known here as Abroni Wewu, or dead white people's clothes.
What is happening is the fast fashion lifestyle of the white man. Mm. They will go for programs, they print some clothing because they know they have a place to dump them.
That was Solomon Noy, the head of waste management in Accra, the capital of Ghana. Some 40% of the imported clothes don't get reworn or repurposed. They simply end up as garbage. When it rains, waterways belch garments into the ocean. The waves bring them right back to form a wall of rags, more than 6 feet high in places, along the shoreline of the city. Sanitation crews fight a losing battle every day, trying to corral Accra's textile waste into landfills. But there's just too much, says Noy.
So at the end of the day, government doesn't have the money to be able to implement the infrastructure that is needed to take care of the white man's clothes.
Probably, yes, exactly.
It's a disaster decades in the making, as clothing has become cheaper, plentiful, and ever more disposable. Each year, the fashion industry produces more than 100 billion apparel items. That's roughly 14 for every person on Earth, and more than double the amount in 2000. Every day, consumers toss out tens of millions of garments. Many land in so-called recycling bins set up in stores by fast fashion chains like H&M, Zara, and Primark. Research shows that when people believe an item will be recycled, they consume more of it. But textile recycling doesn't yet exist at scale. Globally, it's estimated that less than 1% of used clothing is actually remade into new garments. Instead, discards enter a global secondhand supply chain, which prolongs their life either by reselling them in developing markets or repurposing them into items like cleaning cloths or insulation. One of the world's biggest used clothing processors is in India's western Gujarat state, Kanam International. Here, forklifts dig their way into 40-foot shipping containers packed tight with used garments, heaving the giant bales inside for sorting and grading. Some 400 women work at Kanam's facility, each sorting as many as 5,000 pieces a day. Sunita Sunil Sahu is one of them.
My name is Sunita Sahu. I have been working with Kanam International for 16 years. I first started with cutting, then sorting, then grading, and now finally I'm on quality control.
The work is tough to automate. A grader needs to quickly decide the economic value of a used garment. Can it be reworn or turned into rags? or is it simply worthless?
It took around 5 years for me to understand which garments were premium brands, as I started with the cutting job. Now I understand properly which ones are branded and which will sell for a better price.
Roughly a third of what the facility receives has no value. Across the industry, that share is growing. The decline in clothing quality has been spurred by fast fashion and consumers' preference for quantity over quality. Garments fall apart after a few washes. Most are blends of cheap synthetic fibers that are difficult to repurpose or recycle, and there's just so much of it that markets are saturated.
Clothing values are high, and the prices are low.
No.
That's why at Robert Hall, you save on family clothes.
Clothing's march toward disposability traces back to the post-World War II period, when companies in America began intentionally designing goods not to last, so that people would keep buying. The fashion industry became geared toward getting consumers, particularly women, to churn through clothing ever faster. By the 1980s, the preconditions for fast fashion were in place. Then one Spanish company perfected the formula.
Hey guys, welcome back to my channel. I'm so excited to be doing this haul for you. I went to Zara and picked out my favorite items.
It's the beginning of October, and it's time to see what's in store. Zara Shop Hop.
I found 10 hidden gems from Zara that are really worth buying.
Inditex, the parent company of Zara, pioneered a retailing model that rolled out 10,000 designs a year and continuously cleared out unsold items. The effect was astounding. Shoppers began dropping by Zara stores 4 times more frequently than those of its competitors. Neurological research has since shown that shopping taps into a region of our brain linked to addictive behavior. Zara had hit on a way to commercialize FOMO, or fear of missing out, before it was even a thing.
And I'm going to share those items with you today so that you can go out and buy them too.
Today, China produces clothes so cheaply that new garments can be competitive with used ones. That's according to Eric Steuben, president of Transamerica's Textile Recycling Inc. They operate one of North America's oldest sorting facilities.
We have to compete. Buyers all the time would say to me things like, well, we're competing against, cheap Chinese manufactured merchandise. So it's, in a lot of these major African markets or global markets, Chinese manufactured clothing competes with secondhand in these markets. I've seen that firsthand in my dealings.
It turns out that recycling clothes back into fibers for new clothes is devilishly difficult. Buttons and zippers need to be removed. Blended fabrics must be unblended. Dyes removed. The technology to do so is nascent. Garment tags that boast recycled fiber content today usually use polyester from plastic bottles. But a plastic bottle can be recycled back into a plastic bottle many times. A plastic bottle turned into a puffer jacket can't. At the end of the day, experts warn that we can't shop our way to sustainability. Recycling will always consume more energy and produce more waste than reusing something, or not consuming it in the first place. Here's Julia Atwood, head of sustainable materials at Bloomberg NEF.
I mean, whenever you're thinking about the circular economy of anything, the best thing to do is to reduce demand.
Yeah.
So you would have to kill the fast fashion market in order to make a meaningful difference to the emissions or footprint of textile recycling.
For Bloomberg, in Vancouver, I'm Natalie Obiko-Pearson.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stiefel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel has become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank, because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Now, Judith Enck is a senior fellow and visiting faculty member at Bennington College. She was previously a senior official at the Environmental Protection Agency under President Obama, and she's also the founder of Beyond Plastics. Judith, thank you very much for coming on Stephanomics. One lesson of Natalie's piece is that when it comes to clothing, the supply of secondhand clothes vastly exceeds what can realistically be reused at home or abroad. Is that also the case for plastics?
Well, there is so much plastic production happening every day. And once it is used, and it's typically single use, there's nothing good to do with it when you're done. Plastics recycling has been an abysmal failure. There's very, very little reuse, refill of plastics. So our world is drowning in single-use plastic. Clothing, 70% of clothing has plastic in it. And unfortunately, plastic production is on track to double in the next 20 years, according to the World Economic Forum. So this absolutely is not sustainable. This is not what people think of when they think of the need for a circular economy.
And I mean, when I look at my recycling bag, and in our part of London, it's all mixed up together. And if I at any given bag in a given week, you know, a lot of it would be plastics that we're taking, whether it's a plastic milk bottles and other things. Is that just a fiction to say that all of those plastics can be recycled?
Yeah, it's a fiction, and it's also a lie perpetuated by plastic producers. We have so little choice when we go to the supermarket. None of us have voted for more plastic, but plastic is cheap and it has flooded the market. And for decades, Big Plastic has suggested to the public, don't worry about all of your single-use plastics, just toss it in your recycling bin. But they have known for decades that plastics fundamentally are not recyclable. That's why in the United States, we're looking at a 5-6% recycling rate, a little bit higher in Europe, but not much higher. And I just want to briefly explain why this is, why plastic is not similar to metal, glass, paper, cardboard. All of those materials can be made from recycled material. And then when you put them in your recycling bin or bag, they actually do get recycled. It's the opposite with plastics, and that's because there are hundreds of different types of plastics. Not only do you have different resins, but they all have different chemical additives and different colorants. So think of your own home. On top of your washing machine, if you have one, you might have a bright orange hard plastic detergent bottle. And then in your refrigerator, you might have a clear, squeezable ketchup bottle. You cannot recycle them together. They are too different. Different chemical additives, different colors. And so plastic recycling is a dead end. And plastic recycling has given other recycling a bad name. I want to be clear. I am a strong supporter, first of waste reduction, refill, reuse, and then definitely recycle all of your metal, glass, paper, cardboard. But you need to know that most plastics do not get recycled.
And is there, just on your example, given that a lot of the consumer products, we do seem to be kind of hardwired to make things out of plastic, would it make it any better to be reducing the different types of plastic? So there was more possibility that maybe that detergent bottle and the ketchup bottle could be recycled in the same place.
Yeah, it definitely would be better if we had fewer types of plastics. But that change is only going to happen when legislative bodies adopt new laws requiring this. The plastics industry and consumer brands like Unilever and Coke and Pepsi and McDonald's, they're not going to change on their own. We need new laws that give us a fighting chance to have a more sustainable economy. So one area is known as extended producer responsibility, and that would put environmental standards on packaging. Just like we have fuel efficiency standards for cars that allow us to save money at the gas station, we have energy efficiency standards for appliances, so we save a little bit of money on our monthly utility bill. We need environmental standards for packaging that encourage reduction, reuse, but also some standardization so you have a chance to actually recycle it. And equally important, we need to reduce the presence of toxic chemicals in packaging, particularly food packaging.
And I guess I should ask where the administration is on this. I mean, we've had sort of landmark environmental legislation in the summer, which was more devoted to the sort of the big picture emissions story. Are there people in the administration, maybe former colleagues of yours in the EPA, who are planning to act on any of this?
No. The Biden administration record and goals on plastic pollution is MIA, missing in action. I don't think the Biden administration, which I have tremendous respect for, I don't think they understand the connection between plastics and climate change. They talk a lot about environmental justice, but they have not done very much to reduce the risks of plastic production in low-income communities and communities of color in places like Louisiana, Texas, Appalachia. Also, there's very little difference between the position that the Biden administration and the Trump administration is taking on a proposed international plastics treaty. But fundamentally, what needs to happen is quite simple. We need to make less plastic. It's affecting health, particularly in low-income communities where the plastic is produced or disposed of. It definitely impacting climate change. It is turning our ocean into a landfill. And plastics is a huge recycling failure. So given all of that, it only makes sense that we make less plastic. But that's the opposite direction that the United States is taking.
This is not a happy message that you've got, Judith. I'm sure it's a realistic one. I guess we should go back to the one bit of good news that you emphasized at the start, which is we shouldn't feel bad about or concerned about where our cans and paper and bottles are going, glass bottles are going. Those are being recycled. We have managed a circularity with those things.
Yes. You know, it's hard to sugarcoat the plastics message because it is pretty dire.
You're definitely not falling into that trap, that's for sure.
Yes, and I'm no fun at parties, but yes.
Well, especially if anyone gives you a plastic cup, I imagine. But anyway,
yeah, it's a scene. but glass in the United States is recycled at 27%, paper and cardboard 66%, ferrous metals 33%. So recycling can work for some materials, and it also creates jobs. But what I am optimistic about is the public wants to see change, and people are mobilizing to get important new laws adopted. Bottle bills, known as, you know, beverage container deposit laws. Put a dime deposit on a beverage container. It eliminates litter of that container. It gets a high recycling rate because it's source separated and kept so clean. Some companies are slowly getting the message. For instance, Coke, one of the largest plastic polluter in the world, announced recently that they will shift to 25% reusable, refillable beverage containers by 2030. Of course, that's going to require deposits on all of those containers. And we're seeing many small businesses emerge that use refillable, reusable containers. These are often women-owned businesses, small businesses around the globe, and that is the future. The future is reduction, reuse, refill, and phasing out plastics.
Judith Enck, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie. A pleasure.
Well, that's it for Stephanomics. That's it for my Black Friday shopping. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, check out the Bloomberg News website for more economic news and views on the global economy, and follow @economics on Twitter. This episode was produced by Yang Yang and Magnus Henriksen, with special thanks to Mohamed Farouk, Augusta Sareva, Natalie Pearson, Eleanor Tyler, and Judith Enck. Mike Sasso is the executive producer of Stephanomics.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.